Welcome in, San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. Today, we're telling you about free arts and culture, the closure of Hillcrest Cinemas, and what schedule cuts could mean for Chula Vista High's renowned arts program. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. There's no doubt living in San Diego can get expensive. But the good news is that there are many things to do and enjoy for free. Two people who are in the know from the San Diego Union-Tribune join us to run down the list. Abby Hamblin is editor of the Community Guides section, and Carlos Rico is the Community Guides reporter. Carlos, Abby, welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So Abby, I'll start with you. For those unfamiliar with this, what can people find in the Community Guides section?
We are a small but mighty team at the San Diego Union-Tribune. And before we get going too much further, I do want to acknowledge our communities up north who are going through a fire and our colleagues who are out there also covering in journalism. We are working on some guides related to the red flag warning that we're under now. For example, I'm working with our weather reporter on some alerts and notification programs that you can sign up for in a weather event. And it's Carlos writing a lot of guides. And sometimes we also collaborate with other teams. As I mentioned, the weather reporter, sometimes with some of the city reporters. We like to describe it as news you can use. And sometimes that's things to do, like what we're about to talk to today. And then sometimes, like I said, it's, you know, info for an emergency or how to prepare for something. We also do guides to upcoming holidays, things to do around town, that type of thing. So yeah, small but mighty.
Well, absolutely. And there's a lot that gets covered in the Community Guides section. Carlos, what goes into creating a guide like this one? I mean, what are you thinking about as you choose your picks?
It's really talking to friends, talking to coworkers, just seeing what's around town, maybe either what's missing or maybe what thing needs to be updated. Like Abby mentioned, it's news you can use. Really want the guides to be a community resource, whether that's places to go for free and take your kids, whether that's where to get some vegan or vegetarian ramen, whether it's, you know, to go see some free comedy shows. Like, it really runs the gamut, but the backbone is, you know, trying to be a community resource for locals and then people that are visiting as well.
Mm-hmm. And primarily, you know, you're focusing on things to do for free. Abby, why was that so important?
Yeah, so every year we do these kind of packages full of guides as we kind of look to what's ahead and how people can kind of think about their year and make some plans for how they want to, you know, thrive here in San Diego. And we really notice that people really appreciate resources that are free or low cost. And that was one of the things we wanted to focus on with our guides this time. So yes, we created a bucket list of 50 free things to do in San Diego County in 2025.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to get into it. So what are some of the big art events that are on your radar this year? First up, I know we've got Art Walk. They usually host different arts events throughout the year. Tell us more about that.
Oh, yeah. So Art Walk is an opportunity for locals to go out and check out some fine art. They do some exhibits, some displays. You can also buy the art, but it's a great event to go to if you want to just, you know, get some arts and culture without spending too much money. They have them throughout the year in different locations. So Art Walk San Diego is the organization that's been hosting these for decades, and they already released their dates for this year. So you could go ahead and get your calendar ready. Mission Fed Art Walk in Little Italy is in April. Art Walk Liberty Station is in August. The Carlsbad version of the event is in September. And then they also have Bella Vita Fest, which is in October. And those are all outlined on artwalksandiego.org.
Well, Carlos, I want to pull you into the conversation here. Something you wanted to highlight was improv. So where can people take free improv classes?
Yeah, it's by Liberty Station. It's called Mockingbird Improv. The public can go learn how to grow their reflex skills, you know, think quickly in spontaneous circumstances, strengthen their self-confidence. Again, it's an introductory to free improv. The class gives guests kind of like a preview on how to do improv and how it works through games. They have real-world scenarios. And this free workshop is once a month down at Liberty Station.
Yeah. Well, the Rady Shell is known for holding concerts, but it's also host a free yoga class. Tell me about that.
Yeah. I feel like if anyone's been out to the Rady Shell, it's arguably one of the best, in my opinion, one of the best scenery you can get and one of the best places to watch and hear concerts. But yeah, I was surprised to find out that Fit Athletic hosts a free yoga class at the Rady Shell once a month. Guests can bring their own or ask to bring their own mat, some sunblock on sunny days. The class is 1 hour. They call it like a quote boot camp yoga, and guests are just asked to RSVP ahead of time because the demand is high and space is limited. So yeah, I think it's just one of those cool things that San Diego has to offer. Like, you can be outdoors. Like, you don't have to be indoors to do yoga. Like, you can get some cool scenery and be, you know, right along the bay. And again, at the Rady Shell, I don't think there's a better way to do yoga.
Yeah, sounds really cool. How about dance? I mean, where can people take free classes or maybe try a new style of dance?
Yeah, I was particularly excited to find salsa and bachata classes for free. Me being Mexican American, like, I love to dance. And then I'm not that great at salsa bachata, but when I found this, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna need to go take some of these classes. They're 1 hour for free on Saturday mornings. It's a dance studio called Majesty in Motion that offers these free classes. It's an introductory classes to bachata and salsa classes. Those dances are pretty infamous down in the Caribbean, in the Dominican Republic, Colombia, Puerto Rico, and they've made their way out here to the States as well with the growing popularity of Latin music over the years. But yeah, guests can go and learn the basics of the dances. There's classes for adults and children. So if you have children and that, you know, maybe they're kind of interested in learning some new dances, you guys can kind of take them simultaneously on Saturday mornings at Majesty in Motion.
Well, Abby, just like author says, having fun isn't hard when you've got a library card. So what are some fun, free things people can do at the library?
Okay, this is definitely something that we really look at when we're putting together our things to do list, which we do weekly as well. I want to shout that out on sandiegouniontribune.com. But there's always something going on at your local library, and you don't actually have to go to just your local library. You can travel across the county. There's a county library system. There's a San Diego library system, some city libraries, but they have everything going on for free, as I should mention, from chess to meditation. They have reptile interaction, anime events, movie screenings, gardening tips. I mean, you can pretty much learn a ton of new skills. You can get involved with other community members to do some of these things. They have free concerts. They have a winter reading challenge going on right now, and you can win prizes. So it's just incredible what they offer. I mean, every day of the week, there's something, and every week, I guarantee you can find something at one of these libraries that will interest you.
And Abby, before we go, you mentioned having guides on wildfires and fire safety. When do those come out?
Yeah, so as I said, we as a guides team do work with other parts of the newsroom to create news you can use in real time. So we're publishing those in response to breaking news, in response to the situations that Sandiegans find themselves in. So those are out now on sandiegouniontribune.com. You can see our app on different glossary, or our guide, I'm sorry, on different glossary terms you need to know in a wildfire, such as what is a red flag warning? What do some of these other terms mean? We also have one on alert programs you should sign up for and how to get notifications from city and emergency officials. And then, you know, all of those can be found on sandiegouniontribune.com.
Lots of important information in them. I've been speaking with Abby Hamblin, Community Guides Editor, and Carlos Rico, Community Guides Reporter at the San Diego Union-Tribune. Carlos, Abby, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, what schedule cuts at Chula Vista High could mean for students in the art program.
They fear that that is going to have an impact on the future, the ability of students to take these arts classes and to fit them into their schedule along with sort of the core classes.
KPBS Midday Edition is back after this break. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. A local high school arts program could see major changes in the new year ahead. Sweetwater Union High School District is moving forward with new cuts to Chula Vista High's 8-period schedule. South Bay and Imperial Valley reporter Corey Suzuki says students, parents, and teachers are worried this will hurt the school's renowned arts program. Take a listen.
Aaliyah Madrigal was at a concert. It was August of 2022, and one of her favorite rock bands was playing in the glow of more than a dozen spotlights at a huge theater in the North Park neighborhood of San Diego.
Man, it feels good to be home in San Diego.
But Madrigal wasn't paying attention to the band. She was watching the lighting technician who was sitting in front of them, operating the huge lights overhead that were flaring and changing color. Madrigal could see it, how the lights were affecting the mood and tone of the room.
I knew what he was doing, and I knew, like, what he was pushing and what it did and stuff. It made it feel really cool that you know, like, stuff that other people don't, and it makes it, the show and everything, look amazing.
Madrigal was still just a sophomore in high school, but already she had a deep understanding of stage lighting work. Madrigal says that's what you get when you go to SCPA, the School of Creative and Performing Arts at Chula Vista High School. For decades, the SCPA has been a big source of pride at Chula Vista High. It's the only dedicated art school in the district and includes classical and jazz bands, a theater program, visual arts, and a folklorico dance program. It's brought in national and regional awards. Hundreds of students have transferred to Chula Vista High just to take SCPA classes. A lot of this is especially possible because Chula Vista High runs on an 8-period schedule, which fits 2 extra classes into the regular school year. That means instead of taking just a handful of creative electives over 4 years, students get to dive deep into specific subjects. Quentin Rivera is a senior studying drama.
So the students have much more time to work with their instruments, work with the arts, and also still be able to balance out the academic work.
Teachers at Chula Vista High say they get a lot out of the 8-period schedule too, including more time to prepare for their classes. Several other school districts in San Diego County have similar schedules, including Poway and Coronado. This year, though, officials with Sweetwater Union High School District have been considering forcing Chula Vista High to end its 8-period schedule and go back to a more traditional 6 periods per day.
We've been hearing rumors for months that the district wanted to put CVH back on a 6-period day. We don't know where this came from.
In January, Chula Vista High band teacher Debbie Nevin spoke at a school board meeting.
The reasons have varied from money to data, but the Poway and Coronado school districts have figured it out, as well as a large number of San Diego Unified Schools.
That month, students organized walkouts, rallied outside the district offices, and spoke at school board meetings. 1,300 people also signed an online petition asking the district to reconsider. But last month, Chula Vista High School principal Jennifer Barker-Hines announced that they were going ahead and ending the 8-period schedule next year. In an email, she said they had made the decision after thoughtful evaluation of school-wide data. District officials still haven't explained in detail how they came to this decision. Like many other school districts, Sweetwater is facing a major budget shortfall this year. But the superintendent declined to comment, and members of the school board and Chula Vista High's principal did not respond to interview requests. In an email, a district spokesperson said the decision was based on the analysis of a working group, which had looked at academic performance data, enrollment trends, and budget impacts. But the spokesperson also didn't respond to further questions.
I feel like we've had no explanation.
Aaliyah Madrigal says many students and parents are still trying to figure out why this is happening. She doesn't feel like they've gotten a straight answer.
I feel like they're making it for their own personal gain. They're not necessarily thinking about the community or the students. They're more like, what's better for us right now?
Madrigal is a senior now. She's learned a lot more and had opportunities to work at the Old Globe and other theaters. When she graduates, she knows what she wants to do. She wants to be a light board technician, like the one at that concert in North Park 2 years ago. Madrigal says she feels ready for that because of her time in SCPA. She's sad that they're still having to fight to show why the program is important to so many people.
Like, I don't think a lot of us would have the opportunities or be able to do what we've done if we didn't have this program and if we didn't have the schedule that allowed us to keep all of the classes.
Madrigal hopes district leaders will reconsider their decision.
And that was South Bay and Imperial Valley reporter Corey Suzuki. He joins me now to talk more about that piece. Hey, Corey.
Hi, Jade. Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you here. So you've spent just over a year following this story, and up to this point, the eight-period schedule was experimental.
Yeah, that's right. The eight-period schedule is sort of not quite the traditional way that high schools have done things in the past. You know, that more often looks like a sort of six-period day where you have kind of one day, you have six classes, and each class is around an hour. The eight-period schedule sort of shakes things up a little bit by reducing the number of classes that you have in a day, but increasing the number of classes that you can take over the course of a school year. So you get to take two additional classes in a year and get to spend more time on each of those classes during the day because you only have half of your schedule each day. And sort of every day on Monday, you know, you would have one set of four classes, and then on Tuesday you would have another set of four classes. And throughout the year, students kind of just switch off every other day.
Huh. And when was this first implemented?
This was in 2016. So this is has been around for a bit now, but not as long as the school's arts program, which goes back to, you know, the 1970s.
Well, given the story we just heard, it sounds like from this experimentation, the program was quite a success for students.
I think a lot of students and parents feel that way, and teachers, too, who work at Chula Vista High. I mean, there are so many stories that alumni of the program have about how this ability to take two additional classes without having to come early before school or stay late after just really made a big difference, you know, getting helping people explore new interests, you know, look at their interests in printmaking, for example, or photography or dance, different kinds of dance and theater, all of these different options that maybe wouldn't necessarily have been available to students if they had to, you know, stay late after school or come early, which is kind of the way that a lot of these sort of elective classes and arts programs often work at schools with a six-period schedule.
Right. And it's so rare to have a school to have a program like this, considering so many others have had to cut arts programs and so many extracurriculars. I mean, tell us more about SCPA's place and significance in the district.
Everyone that I spoke to has said that SCPA has been sort of this, you know, crown jewel of Sweetwater Union High School District for a long time. It's the district's only dedicated arts program. It's an arts magnet school within Chula Vista High. And, you know, the district's own reports say that over the course of the last few years, SCPA has drawn hundreds of students to transfer to Chula Vista High within the district just so that they can take these classes and have access to, you know, the opportunities that a program like SCPA opens up.
Right. Well, these cuts have been looming over Chula Vista High since late last year. What finally prompted Sweetwater to make these cuts? I mean, it sounds like district officials still haven't explained in great detail what's going on there.
Yeah, and I do want to emphasize here that these cuts are to a structural change to Chula Vista High School's schedule. So they're not necessarily, at least at this point, explicitly going to be cuts to the school's arts program. But the restructuring of that schedule, changing from an eight-period day back to a sort of a more traditional six-period schedule, is what has worried a lot of students and teachers and parents in the arts program because they fear that is going to have an impact on the future, the ability of students to take these arts classes and to fit them into their schedule along with sort of the core classes. When it comes to what officials with the district have said, they've been largely very silent on why this decision is happening. You know, I reached out to, for this story, every member of the district school board, and I reached out in person to the superintendent. And all of them either declined to comment. The superintendent referred me to the district spokesperson. And what the district has said publicly is that they convened a working group to evaluate this schedule format, the experimental schedule, and that the working group sort of evaluated data on different things like student retention and graduation rates and the cost of the program. And in the end, decided based on the findings of that working group, the district decided that it would be best to move forward without an 8-period schedule. But, you know, when asked about specifics, I've asked about specifics, students and parents and teachers have asked about specifics, like the sort of specific data and data points and information that led to this decision. The district really has been has not volunteered those. So it's kind of, it's hard to say at this point why the district officials have made this decision.
Well, as we heard in your story, students, teachers, and parents are all worried about what this means for the future of art schools and art programs. What else are you hearing? I mean, what could this mean in the new year as school returns to session next week?
When it comes to this spring, not much is going to change. I mean, you know, the year is going to finish out at Chula Vista High with the 8-period schedule, just like the fall was running on. Where the changes are going to come is in the new school year. So after the summer, that's when, as the plans have been currently laid out by Chula Vista High School's principal, that's when these changes will kick in and Chula Vista High will revert back to a 6-period schedule for all students. So all students will not have the opportunity to take 8 classes within their sort of regular schedule.
Well, in your eyes, how do these schedule cuts reflect trends we're seeing locally or nationally, specifically this decline in art school and arts funding?
These do reflect, these changes at Chula Vista High do reflect, I think, what a lot of teachers and parents worry is sort of a lack of investment in the arts by Sweetwater Union High School District generally. And this isn't, you know, I should say this isn't specific to Sweetwater Union High School District. I mean, many districts, many arts programs across the state sort of feel this sort of same kind of lack of attention and lack of sort of investment. At the same time, what's interesting about, I think, right now and is that you know, the state has made a really big investment in arts and public schools. Prop 28, a new law which was passed in 2022, put $1 billion into these programs across California every year. And that was something that came up a lot in these conversations that I was having with parents and teachers, especially. They wonder what is going on here, you know, at this time when these programs like SCPA are supposed to be receiving this sort of new funding and are supposed to be growing, not shrinking. They wonder what the disconnect is between those changes on the statewide level and what they're seeing at Chula Vista High and reflected in their local school board's decisions.
And I know it's something you'll continue to follow. I've been speaking with South Bay and Imperial Valley reporter Corey Suzuki. You can find the full web story on kpbs.org/midday. Corey, thank you so much as always.
Thanks, Jade. Always good to talk with you.
Likewise. Still to come, Landmark just closed the Hillcrest Cinemas, but did you know that 10th Avenue Arts Center has the IMAX of Grindhouse, where you can see films not even Landmark would show?
We've been able to kind of convert that into a movie experience with a giant screen that we haul, like we roll in on wheels, and we have been trying to make that feel like an old school Grindhouse cinema.
We'll introduce you to Popcorn Reef and its alternate film programming after this break. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. Cinema enthusiasts across San Diego are mourning the loss of Landmark Theater's Hillcrest Cinemas, which closed its doors this past Sunday. The art house venue has screened many independent films since 1991 and become a treasured space for film lovers. KPBS cinema junkie Beth Accomando reflects on the closure and introduces us to someone who's trying to fill the void.
Landmark Theaters just closed the Hillcrest Cinemas, and I had a chance to speak with Michael McQuiggan, who's the program director at FilmOut, about what that meant to him.
We've had our monthly screenings at Landmark Hillcrest Cinemas for about 12 years now, so we were actually kind of devastated about the news that we received. We didn't actually even receive the news personally. I happened to see something on Instagram implying that they were closing. So immediately I ran out to my contact who's in Los Angeles and I was like, what is going on? And the bottom line is we figured out that they were closing, but they really didn't want to confirm. So then we had our last screening in December. Of course, when I went in there, the first thing I did was go up to my contact there. They did confirm that they were going to be closing on January 5th and that immediately the next day on the 6th, they were going to start gutting it and that they were going to be turning it into office spaces. So that was kind of a blow to Film Out, and for film lovers who love indie cinema in San Diego, it's just another one bites the dust. There's really not, there. I mean, we have the Digital Gym, we have Cinema in the Stars, we have a couple of other places in North County that showcase independent films. But you know, it's just disheartening for us as film lovers to try to find what are we going to do next? What are the next steps? With this platform gone, it just kind of, you know, a lot of rearranging because where do we go from here? Can we get the audience to travel to different locations in San Diego? So did a lot of research, and it looks like we're going to try out Hazard Center UltraStar starting on February 12th. So we're going to see, we're going to do a few screenings there over the next few months. We'll see how that goes. And I know there is an audience for it. So I'm hoping that it will continue with our screenings over at UltraStar.
And I'm here with Eddie Garola of Popcorn Reef. And we just heard from Michael talking about having to relocate his monthly film series from Film Out. So as somebody who programs film, what does the closing of Landmark's Hillcrest Cinemas mean to you?
Well, first of all, that's really terrible that Michael has to reroute, and that was a really cool thing for the community there. So that's blowing my mind that that happened. With Landmark closing, I think it's signaling kind of a new era of movie going, and we've been seeing that post-COVID with the way that movies, art house movies are released, whether it's straight to streaming now, a lot of them are getting picked up by streamers. That whole issue is probably part of what's going on here. I also do think that a lot of the major chains are actually picking up a lot of independent-ish films, and they're putting them, you can see them at Regal, you can see them at AMC, and that when people have those memberships and all that, that might have been taking traffic away from a place like the Landmark. Like, I went to see Pan's Labyrinth down there in, was that 2005, 2006? Like, with my friends from high school, and that was the only place you could see it was at the Landmark Hillcrest. So it was like a destination thing. Hey, this is a not a blockbuster movie, and we're going to go down here and see it. Now you would be able to see Pan's Labyrinth everywhere. I feel like that took some of the audience from the Landmark, and it's really a shame, because I know then they had to start playing more mainstream films. And it's interesting to see, but it's also really sad to see.
I know a lot of people are mourning the loss of Landmark's Hillcrest Cinemas, but I also feel like they are ignoring the fact that there are still places that exist where they can go to movies. There's Digital Gym Cinema, there's Cinema Under the Stars, there's Angelica Film Center, and someone like you with Popcorn Reef are actually bringing us stuff that is not showing anywhere else. So talk a little bit about trying to find venues to show kind of these unique one-off film programs.
Yeah, it's really a lot of a personal thing for me. I pick movies that I want to learn more about that really rocked me. Maybe sometimes when I was a kid, it really like resonated with me in some way. And then some of the stuff I did not live through the 70s, but we're showing like a giallo program. And I'm just moved by those pieces of cinema. That's how the programming starts. And then venue-wise, like, we've been all around San Diego. We've worked with a bunch of different awesome venues. And right now, we're at the Regal Mira Mesa now. And I'm really excited about that because that brings a certain flavor to the films we show, because it's like, wow, we're seeing this at a Regal Theater. And it's kind of like, this is an off-the-wall movie that you can't see at a Regal Theater most of the time. And then we're also over at the 10th Avenue Arts Center downtown. And that's a performing arts center that does a lot of really awesome stage productions. And we've been able to kind of convert that into a movie experience with a giant screen that we haul, like we roll in on wheels. And we have been trying to make that feel like an old school grindhouse cinema. And we're doing the giallo program there, where we're going to show 70s films and grimy type things like that, that you would not see them at a multiplex or at a mainstream theater. And I hope people can come and see movies that they've never heard of before and experience something wild. And then we're also at the Adams Avenue Theater, and we've had a lot of really awesome guests there. That's in Normal Heights, and it can be a concert venue. It also serves as a wedding venue, and it's been really fun to experiment with that because the community there is so vibrant, and they love movies, and there was the Ken. Like, but over on that side of Normal Heights, there wasn't something like a movie theater in general. So it's kind of more of like a neighborhood hangout. We have a lot of guests that come there. The filmmakers talk about the films, and we show 80s films and early 90s films too. It's kind of like our niche there.
Well, I do love that when you describe 10th Avenue Theater, you call it the IMAX of Grindhouse down there.
Yeah, that's what we were trying to go for, because I was lucky enough, Beyond Fest up in L.A. did a screening of – they did a few screenings of films at the IMAX headquarters that they opened up to the public. So I got to go and see Dunkirk there, like on the IMAX campus. And their screen there that they actually use to test the movies is – it's not that big, but I noticed that the way they position the screen is very much closer, so you can kind of feel like you're floating in the screen. And so that's kind of what we tried to do with at the 10th Avenue Arts Center, where you can feel like you're really immersed in the screen, even though it's not a giant, you know, 60 feet tall venue. It does feel like you're not going to see, like we showed Dr. Butcher MD there last year. You're not going to see Dr. Butcher MD on a screen like this, I don't think, in 2024 anywhere else.
Well, in talking about screens where you're not going to see these films normally, you have next Wednesday coming up The Guyver, and this is going to be at a multiplex. You mentioned the Regal Mira Mesa. How hard was it to convince a multiplex to let you show something that probably has never screened on a mainstream cinema?
You know what? Everyone at Regal has been really excited about this, and it's I think a lot of it is that I'm from Scripps Ranch, and I grew up going to the Regal Mira Mesa. It used to be called Edwards Mira Mesa.
Yeah.
Since it opened when I was a kid, and so I've been there for so long, it's kind of like I feel like my home away from home. And this idea that I had of like being able to show really wild, crazy movies at that theater kind of it resonated with everyone on the team there. So everyone's been really pumped about it, and people have been coming too. And it's a fun experience. Again, it's kind of playing off the vibe that we have, that there is it's a multiplex theater that shows all your favorite blockbusters, but you get to see this kind of crazy movie you'd never think of before seeing in a theater like that.
Well, and explain how crazy this one is.
The Guyver, yes.
Nothing less than the fate of the human race is at stake when this girl meets this boy.
This fits into the movies that I was talking about earlier, where I'm trying to find movies that like really rocked me, or that with my very early childhood images that were from that. So I was lucky enough to have the director of Society, Brian Usna, who's also a pretty prolific movie producer. He came out last year to talk with me about Society. And that's a movie that really bothered me, as I didn't even see it till I was in my early 20s, but it was all of these images that were like what I was afraid of when I was a small child. And I wanted to like break down these like infantile fears and kind of face that and understand where he was coming from making it. And The Guyver is like, it's he did not direct the movie. It's directed by Steve Wang and Screaming Matt George, but he produced it. And in many ways, it's kind of a follow-up to Society, in the sense that all of the look of those effects and the gore and the weird characters are all still there. And yet it's also an action movie that, and I know this has not been lauded about The Guyver, but it reminds me a lot of Power Rangers, which I grew up watching around the same time.
I am The Guyver.
So kind of like the mix of those two is just, I think it's an incredible experience. It's a really fun movie. It's early 90s nostalgia, like nonstop. And it's something that I don't think has gotten celebrated enough. So that's why we're doing it.
Well, and January is also unofficially set aside for Giallo, and you're going to be showing a triple bill of Giallo films. But before we talk about the specific films, explain to people what Giallo is in case they're not familiar.
Yeah, Giallos are Italian murder mysteries. It's kind of like maybe the blanket way to describe a Giallo. They're Italian horror movies. It doesn't have to be a horror movie to count as a Giallo. And they served as like the prototype for the slasher, if you know, like Friday the 13th, there are movies like that, and that started emerging in the 80s. I think that the slasher was influenced by the giallo, but they're known for really stunning cinematography and really amazing visuals, somewhat psychedelic, like colorful visuals, beautiful women, a lot of fashion emphasis. And then the other part of it is with Italian cinema, it's always like, why are they doing all these things? Like part of it is something that's lost in translation maybe, or like it's part of their culture and we don't understand it. But there's a lot of elements that are like, okay, this is kind of an odd mixed match of different things, right?
And well, giallo is always kind of like a fever dream. Like
yeah.
It doesn't always make logical sense, but it's absolutely mesmerizing.
I agree. And it's something that like, I get bothered by, because there's like sometimes a sense of dread in some of the best ones, but it's also coming from a place of something's off and I don't know why, but that might be something that's lost in translation or it might be intentional. I think with Argento, it's intentional with most of his movies. It's always a murder mystery, but there's no chance that you could even figure out who actually did it because there's gaps in logic a lot of the time. And it's a really fun time.
Well, and you were showing three. And one of the things about giallo are the titles. So just reading these titles, I've always wanted to take like all the titles of giallo and try to make one story out of them because the titles are so like elaborate.
Really cool.
So you were showing three films and these are All the Colors of the Dark, Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key, which is probably one of my favorite titles, and The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward. So tell us what this triple bill is going to be about.
Yeah, so this triple bill is dedicated to the star of all three of those films, Edwig Finch, and she's like one of the original Scream Queens, and she starred in, I believe, six giallos. All three of the ones we're showing are all directed by Sergio Martino, who's considered one of the masters of giallo, and these are three really awesome movies that showcase her talent. We just wanted to kind of do a tribute to her because when I think giallo, I think Edwig Finch. And so that's kind of the idea behind this.
And another key part of giallo is music. The scores in a lot of these films are just amazing.
This is, yeah, it's going to be rocking when we play these films. We're going to turn the bass up and it's, yeah, like you said, it's a mesmerizing experience.
And looking forward to what you have coming next, are these venues places that look like they're going to be permanent for you? I mean, are you happy with this? Are you still looking for more places?
I'm really happy with the lineup we've got right now, and I do all this pretty much on my own. We've got Alex now, who's our new intern. He's helping out, but sometimes it's stressful because it's kind of a little seat-of-your-pants thing where, like, I don't know what we're going to show in February yet. I wish I had that all lined up, but we don't have that yet. So hopefully we're going to have a little bit, like, in this year, it's going to be a lot more consistent, and we're going to be at all three places continuing to deliver those different things. I think that the downtown, we're going to do a lot of grindhouse stuff. And at the Adams Avenue Theater in Normal Heights, we're going to be doing a lot of 80s and early 90s stuff. And then everywhere kind of in between and maybe some later, like I was mentioning to you, Billy Madison's one of my favorite movies of all time, which doesn't fit into this genre of film thing, but is still kind of like an outrageous piece of cinema. We're going to be doing hopefully that type of stuff at Mira Mesa along with the filmmaker Q&As and the 80s, 90s programming as well over there.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for talking about the upcoming programming at Popcorn Reef, and I will see you in the cinemas.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me, Beth. Appreciate it.
That was Beth Accomando speaking with Eddie Garola of Popcorn Reef. The Guyver screens Wednesday at Regal Mira Mesa Cinemas. That's our show for today. If you missed anything, you can download KPBS Midday Edition on all podcast apps. Don't forget to watch Evening Edition tonight at 5 for in-depth reporting on San Diego issues. The Roundtable is here tomorrow at noon. Before we go, I'd like to thank our Midday Edition team, producers Ashley Rush, Juliana Domingo, and Andrew Bracken, senior producer Brooke Ruth, supervising audio producer Quinn Owen, arts segment contributor Beth Accomando, technical producers Bryn Redlosk, Brandon Trufa, and Rebecca Chacon. The Midday Edition theme music is from San Diego's own Surefire Soul Ensemble. I'm Jade Hindman. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend, everyone.